Welcome to the show, Ben Tostashev from Paragon Wines. How's things, mate? Where are we finding you this morning?
Yeah, I'm in sunny Sydney, and as I say to my my children, win the morning, win the day. And yeah, it's been a beautiful morning here this morning. I'm two coffees in, so all good.
Excellent.
Ben actually did mention, he said, look, it's not going to be like it's that early, but I think I'll need a couple of coffees under my belt. So good for you, Ben, good for you. How was your Easter? How did you spend it?
I had a lovely Easter. Thanks, Jill. I'm a bit of a nerd, actually. I've spent a bit of time reading the... I've got a copy for my birthday of the Australian Wine Arc, and I'd set myself volume one to get through, which I failed miserably, but a bit of reading, a bit of nice wines, bit of chill time, so it was good.
It's a great Bible. It was Andrew that we had on the show, gosh, it was probably about a year ago now, but the Wine Arc's great. So does that mean your birthday was very recent?
Yes, it was. A bit of a milestone birthday that justified a present, but yeah.
It's a good present.
Good present, Ben.
That Arc is three volumes of must-have in the bookshelves. Yeah, we had a chat with Andrew recently.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. I've actually got the downloadable form, which is actually very, very convenient. But look, well, happy birthday, whatever date that was, and for whatever milestone, I won't force you to say it, because we'll move on to wine. How's that? Although, did you open a very special bottle of wine on your celebration?
Look, yeah, I think the older you get, the longer your birthday can go for. So
absolutely.
We had a Jeroboam of 864 Chardonnay at the actual day, which was pretty amazing to be able to share it with a really good cohort of friends and family. So that's what wine's all about.
It's a big bottle, but hopefully the cohort wasn't too big.
Yeah, cool, son.
What's Jeroboam? 3 litres?
Yeah, 3 litres. Yeah.
3 litres. Oh, well, nice. Very nice. Six bottles of wow, that does six people, really. Well, so Ben, your surname, and I think we did pronounce it correctly, Tolstoyev. What's your background?
Yeah, you nailed it, Jill. My father was actually born in Graz in Austria, but we have Yugoslavian and some Russian heritage as well. But yeah, I was, I guess you could say I'm pretty much Australian. I was born in Adelaide, but I actually grew up in the steel city, which is Whyalla on the east coast of Eyre Peninsula, where my dad was just a local doctor and gastroenterologist. And yeah, it was a pretty amazing place to grow up. You know, I had a motorbike track in my backyard, and we shared a shack around the coast a bit at Port Douglas with a couple other families. It's probably not quite the level exotic as the Port Douglas in Queensland, Jill, but for a young boy into fishing and outdoors, it's pretty amazing. So, yeah, I guess you could say I'm a modern Australian mix with a bit of European ancestry.
Nice. Okay, so Austrian. Are you a fan of the Grüner Veltliner?
Oh, yes, absolutely. My old next-door neighbours up in the hills, Mark and Larry at Hundorf Hill, probably the benchmark for me.
Of course. Oh, that's a good benchmark. I actually had a beautiful bottle myself the other day from the Hunter Valley. It is a gorgeous one. So you've got quite an interesting background, but as you say, you've been in Australia for most of your life, starting in Adelaide. How did you move to Sydney? What's been the progression?
I guess if we go back a bit from when I moved from Whyalla to Adelaide to sort of start my high school, and I kind of stayed with my father in Adelaide. So I've always been incredibly close to my mum, but I kind of felt lucky, bizarrely, having my parents divorce, because I got a big brother that I always wanted, and another sister, and a stepfather, and a stepmother. So it became a big dynamic family. But I guess to get into this sort of industry and get into Sydney after school, I kind of got into the creative sector. I studied graphic design, and I worked at a place called Good Sports that designed all the merchandise for Formula One. So when Adelaide had the Grand Prix in those days, again showing my age, but that was an awesome experience. And then I went from there to actually start my own design firm and design wine labels and all sorts, being in the cultural hub of South Australia. But it was at that point that my stepfather and my mum actually purchased a block of dirt in Harndorf in the Adelaide Hills. It was it's an old potato and cattle farm in Ardorf, and I helped design the logos, the signage, the wine labels, and I guess that curiosity bug well and truly bit with wine at that point. So, I'd actually started leaning into wine a bit earlier, Jill. He was a classic SA red wine lover, and Michael Andrew Arthur at East End Cellars in Adelaide. He actually helped me with my first wine purchase, which was it was six bottles in the end. He got me Brokenwood Graveyard Shiraz.
That'll do it to you.
Yeah, it was a cool starting point.
So you've actually traversed quite a lot of different areas. I mean, you've worked at the Lane Vineyard, very famous, and that'll certainly be coming up later as well. At Oakridge, which of course Paragon does own, and congratulations, of course, on coming number five in the recent Real Review results. We can touch on that. Did you choose those places in particular? How did that all happen?
Did I choose what? Sorry, I missed that.
So going from the Lane and Oak Ridge, like, how was it that you moved between those? Was there something that particularly influential about them that made you want to work with them?
I started working the family wine business full time in 2005. My parents had sold a joint venture business called Starved Dog Lane to Constellation Brands at that point.
Yes.
And it gave us the capital to really start a family wine business, with big aspirations. And we kind of focused on three pillars being, food, wine and tourism. And that direct mm-hmm. customer model, it's still a big part of the strategic plan that they have on site. But there's a focus that I really worked on building niche distribution globally. But I broke my back on a quad bike, as you do, in a family wine business. And it was a bit of a trigger for me to become, almost a storyteller of our business in terms of brand ambassador work. And then I actually did an MBA, and I finished it in Donghua and in Shanghai in China, which was wonderful to study a bit in Beijing and Shanghai. That just opened up a whole different world of sort of thinking and structure for me. But we sold that business to a UK family, and my wife's work actually took us to Sydney, Jill, where we've been here for about 10 years, and we love this town. It's if you're an outdoorsy person, it's bloody brilliant. But the opportunity for Oak Ridge, it came through an introduction from Oatley, the Oatley Fine Wine business, who were distributing our wine at that point. And they introduced me to David Bicknell at Oak Ridge, which I just knew it was a oncer. And so I'd sort of launched into this, and it's fair to say I kind of continue to learn from David, and it's just a privilege that gives me great joy sending sort of his message out to the market. But Oak Ridge was, I'm still great friends with the previous owners, actually, but they didn't have a generational opportunity with their children, and it was time for them to sort of take the next life step. And Oak Ridge was acquired by the Endeavour Group, and it became sort of part of this growing collective of wines, which is Paragon. And I guess Paragon's part of the Endeavour Group, which is it's a growing stable of those premium wine brands, and each got their own sort of unique winemaking culture. And my role is sort of now to champion those brands and to respect those sort of long-established processes and cultures that actually make them standout producers already. So I'm kind of an extension to the winemaking team now, but, there's Chapel Hill, Shingleback, Krondorf, Riddick, Isabel Estate, Oak Ridge, and Joseph Cromie, and the latest acquisition was Kate Mantel. So to work with all these wonderful businesses, each with their own sort of unique DNA and stories to tell and different life paths, that's really cool. With the Real Review results coming out this week, Oak Ridge, it's so cool to be in the top five after winning it last year. Chapel Hill was 86th, Cape Mantel was 88th, and they've all done well in a strong position through the Real Review. So, we're pretty chuffed with that as a result.
Mm. Yeah, no, congratulations.
There's some amazing brands, Ben. I can tell you've spent a fair bit of time in South Australia, just by your accent. You haven't got rid of that in Sydney. I'm interested because the first thought that comes to my mind when you talk about a big corporate buying these brands that have a lot of heritage and you know, typically family beginnings and things, is that things can change. Are you seeing that? Are you, you know, aware of it yourself? And you know, or is it kind of staying? You know, Dave's running this joint and he's, you know, doing it his way still, and he won't be pushed around by accountants.
Yeah, good question, Simon. I guess the only constant is change. And I've always learned from my family, if you're actually sitting still, you're going backwards. But I think the whole purpose of Paragon is to preserve that unique sort of almost like the secret sauce of each brand and keep them unique and that custodianship nature, but just to leave them better than when we found them at the end of the day. Yeah. That's really what it's about. So, you know, they buy the people as much as the place. So, you know, all those assets and credentials and historical sort of richness to the stories, they're all kind of intertwined and just as important as each other, I guess.
Yeah.
Do you, I mean, you get around to all of them, and you just listed off the brands. They're obviously all around Australia and New Zealand as well, of course, as a bubble state, et cetera. So do you spend a lot of time on the road?
Yes and no, yeah. We're pretty efficient with it. And I guess with COVID, it really just changed the way we did business sort of fundamentally, how you can communicate better and richer through the virtual means. So, yeah, otherwise you could literally spend the whole year on the road if you wanted to. But I think coming in, being efficient, having impact and, you know, getting in and getting out is important. But, I think on favourites on my phone, nearly every winemaker's on my favourites on there. So we talk as much as I do with my wife, I think.
Yeah, very, very, very family focused. You don't have any New South Wales wineries, do you?
No, it's a good call out, Jill. You never say never, but I think at the moment it's probably a good time for us to pause and really take stock of what we've got and let them bed in and sort of soak up the soil that we're standing in and, you know, really polish what we've got. You know, in the last couple of years, it's been amazing. Like with Krondorf and the Barossa Valley, you know, we opened a really cool cellar door in an old flour mill in Tanunda. The flour mill was built at the same era as the village of Krondorf. That was cool. You know, Riddick in the Coonawarra, we've just done a new site development and this old Highbank site that's right next to Catnook, which is the origins of John Riddick's sort of first vintage in the Coonawarra. So bringing those stories back to life has been great fun. And, you know, forward facing, you know, Chapel Hill celebrating 50 vintages this year. Amazing new wine that's coming out called The Devil, that's a bit of a celebratory wine of 50 years for that. And, you know, they'll be releasing premium sort of MPDs that have taken years to develop within each brand. It's kind of cool, you know. Each brand, it sort of retains your curiosity. But, to go from a single focus brand to working across eight now, it's dynamic and it's just bloody good fun. And I guess, you know, from my perspective, there's no sort of, in a life way, there's no master plan, Jill, but, you know, I'm just up for adventure and always learning, and I love just to stay curious. But if you love what you do and sort of just do the best that you can of what's in front of you, that's really what it's all about. But I guess these eight wineries, they give me the opportunity, Simon, to surround myself with good people, and you know, that's the privilege that I have.
I love
you've got a fabulous attitude.
Yeah.
Must have been the coffee, Jill.
Two coffees in, absolutely.
Ben, I love the fact that you're really embracing and heroing the history of these brands and with, you know, maybe some financial support that some of the brands may not have sort of had at their disposal before the purchase, you know. So bringing back things that and the history and the buildings and embracing all of that, that's just unreal. There's a number of people in the industry who are doing that, and it's awesome because things can move on, in the name of progress, and we lose these amazing bits of history, right?
That's so true. Yeah, Nick Ryan actually, you know, he influenced some of my Wine Journey some years back, he had some commentary on the need for us to, you know, celebrate the classics in both varietal and brand. You know, and he was talking about the Windarees of Australia, but he was talking about the people behind the brands. They really have a story to tell as well. So, you know, we need to be good storytellers about these brands, and you can only do it if you've got authentic stories to tell. And, you know, that's where some of these brands have just got an amazingly rich history that, we can build on.
Well,
so it's actually mentioning, absolutely it is. It's well, Simon, as you say, it's the history, but it's the people who are running it. I mean, then you know, when you're working with the likes of Michael Fragos from Chapel Hill and Dave Bicknell, and you mentioned Nick Ryan, these sort of people, that's going to be keeping you on your toes. You're going to be learning a lot from them, but it must be a hell of a lot of fun because they're such characters. It's just you've all got a completely different mindset and you've got different views about different things, but ultimately you are trying to achieve a very similar sort of goal. And whilst you're not letting the story get lost in the process, I can imagine that's quite compelling for you.
Yeah, it keeps the fun in it, Jill. But, you know, I think if you look back at sort of what sort of those key influences you have, and it is my family, you know, I had sort of academic influence from my father, and my mum had all of those sort of human soft skills, and she's still a source of inspiration now. She was Mrs. Cashflow for us in the early days when we were building the business. She was CEO of the Nurses Board in South Australia, and some of that sort of skill set came through as well. But I am surrounded by incredible talent at work, and I guess, you know, also I was fortunate enough to be a future leader a few years ago, and that really bonded me with an amazing cohort of people. And, you know, Sarah Crowe was in my cohort as well. So to see her shine and take the mantle with the Rural Review, it's just so cool to see her and her team and the region just continue to shine. But there's, you know, other people like Rob Hassan at Oatley's, he's sort of taught me to really stay market focused and be authentic and, you know, care about your teams and how you get there as well. So, I've been very lucky, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, just very quickly on Nick Ryan, I mean, I think it was only in the last week or two that they've announced that he's taking over as editor of the Wine Companion, which is a huge, huge thing. And that's, that's a big job and a massive accolade for him.
Yeah, I think being a South Australian, reading his Sunday Mail column every Sunday is one of the funniest, best columns to read. But he's
really a classic.
We're lucky to have him in the wine industry and to see him take into this this next stage. He's both ready and there's such a will for him to succeed by the whole wine industry, the collective community, I guess. So, that was pretty exciting, Jill. It's good to see.
It's interesting timing, isn't it, Ben, that, James Halliday has sort of basically, well, he's retiring, you know, from the article in The Australian after 40 years. And it's a changing of the guard in a lot of respects with the industry. Now we've got the new opportunity of China, and I was going to ask about, you know, your eight wineries and how much they used to do with China before the tariffs, and then whether they're, you know, looking at, obviously no one's going to jump boots and all in again. But are they looking at that as an opportunity? Is there enough? Well, there seems to be enough fruit in the industry. Is there a will to head that way?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're all, as an industry, pretty grateful that we're back having these meaningful conversations again. And, you know, to see the likes of Warren Randall heading over for his probably 160th trip to China and leading the way with those types of things, we're cautiously optimistic about the next steps that go through there. But everything we do has a sort of more of a longer-term viewpoint. So if we've got something meaningful and enduring from a distribution relationship, we're up for it. But you can't be everything to everybody either. You do need to say, okay, this brand has a natural fit for this sort of shape of consumer. And, you know, I guess with Gen Z's entering the workforce and millennials, you know, they're settled in their careers and, you know, but the main consumers that we have are the baby boomers. You know, how we retain that curiosity and keep them leaning into these classics, you know, the fine wine area, as well as that, the you know, the curiosity of the new, be it Bagnums or new varietals. But to my mind, you know, drinking fresher, brighter, more lively wines, I think that's going to be a critical part of every brand's sort of architecture.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's because it is a lot more short-term, isn't it, the thinking of lots of things, but wine particularly with the youngies. you know, if they've got a cellar, it's maybe a couple of dozen, right, rather than, 240 dozen or something. You know, it's not keeping things for 25 years. You know, we've got a lot of listeners who will have stuff in their cellar that is, you know, sitting waiting. You know, Cabernets from Coonawarra that at 25 years old and probably still got plenty in them. But you know, that's a long time for someone to wait when they're 25 years old.
Yeah. Great call out. Talking to Hugh and Hook, he drinks, he likes Cabernet from 40 years on. And I just said to him, how do you get access to things like that? And my cellar does have a disproportionate amount of Cabernet in it. And I just love what it brings. But if anything, my cellar's getting younger rather than older. I like the freshness in wine, really.
And, yes.
It's uplifting. Jill, it's got to work with food too, doesn't it? You know, these wines, you're just sitting at the table with good food, good people. I think that's really when wine shines. And, not every brand is created to make wines that are going to go that long haul like some of the Coonawarra Cabernets. But it's also what's awesome about wine as well, isn't it? That everything keeps moving, and different varietals bring different enjoyments, I guess.
So, given the nature of your role as a lead sales manager for all these excellent brands that you're seeing great restaurants and all around Australia and of course New Zealand, are you noticing a change in conversation as to what the buyers are wanting for the restaurants and bottle shops? Like, are you actually seeing that trend of the new drinker, exactly as you said, wanting wines to be younger because you want them to be fresh, they're still flavoursome, that sort of jazz, Mediterranean varietals, whatever it is. Are you seeing a change?
Yeah, 100%, Jill. The other thing we're seeing is brands that have good saliency, they're known. People don't want to take a risk, and the restaurateurs want to have wines on their list that will almost sell themselves as well. So wines that, have that lean in by the consumer, so you don't have to have a sommelier pushing a wine into someone as an introduction. I think we're seeing more and more of that stability in those sort of known premium brands starting to cement. But I think we're not seeing much of a drop off per se of the amount of activity in on premise. We're probably seeing less order frequency as things right. Temper back a bit. But as with everything, as we said earlier, it's the long game, isn't it? These relationships, you want to be there thick and thin.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And, it's all testament to the brand. I mean, it's much easier to sell when the brand is well-known and has a great reputation, and you kind of go from there.
Well, do you know the other 100%. Thing? Yeah, Ben and Jill, the other thing I was thinking, when you were talking about the stories of these brands, this show is all about, I suppose, exposing the people behind those brands and the stories behind those brands, and it makes such a difference when you go to a cellar door, for instance, and you meet the people. Might be the winemaker you're talking to, or the team, and everyone's completely invested in that brand. And you buy a bottle and you drink it later on. That takes you back to that spot and that memory and the stories. And it's not something you can just get from reading a back label on a bottle in a retail shop, right?
Totally. Exactly. That's the experience. You know, it's almost like going to a live music event, and then you listen to that music a couple of weeks later. Your brain's teleported back to that place. And I think visiting wineries and actually that regional visitation, you become a storyteller of that region back in your community when you come back as well. So that amplifies if you've had a good experience. But I think just you get more out of wine if you've been in region and talked to the winemakers or talked to someone that lives and breathes it. Because most of the people I work with in these wineries, it's not what they do for a living. It, you know, it's their life. You know, it's 100% in. It's not a clock on, clock off sort of scenario.
Yeah.
Yep. So it's actually an even better excuse for everyone to be planning their weekend trips away to wine regions. You know, just whether you're jumping on a plane and going to one in a different state or jumping in the car and driving a couple of hours, it is just that immersive experience changes everything. And anyone who's listening to the show obviously doing so because they love wine.
Totally.
At 9 a.m. on a Sunday.
Plan the Sunday
out. So, Ben, what is sort of next for you? I mean, you've been with Paragon now for around 3 years, so that's pretty solid. What do you see as coming up next? You know, Simon's already mentioned the Chinese and if that's going to be making any difference or not, but what do you see the future for Paragon over the next, say, you know, 5 years?
I think just at a very simple level, we're building out these vintage release programs for each of our brands so that we can sort of highlight and showcase in a meaningful way. You know, the seasons are the reasons, aren't they? So each vintage, when you got a lot of single vineyard wines, you know, there's a sameness, but then a uniqueness that each year brings. And when you get the three cold, wet years that we had with La Nina recently in the Arrow Valley, having those colder, more challenging viticultural years, I think that's when the true skill sets are tested. And, you know, in a warm year, people can, you know, make great wine and in a regional thing that there's a level of sameness that seems to come through and the quality's there. But when you have those cooler years, that's when your challenge comes and you can really shine, to be frank, if you're preemptive and proactive. So for me, storytelling is, bringing those vintage-specific stories to life and really championing the winemakers to keep these brands with a heartbeat. People buy from people at the end of the day, don't they? So to humanise
yes.
these brands and keep them human, that's where I see us heading. So it's not anything crazy in terms of growth or anything overly global, but more authentication of the stories.
I've got to ask, because you're based in Sydney, do you get to the Hunter Valley just for a random weekend very often?
I've got to be honest, when I get off of work, I've been immersed in wine so much, I just want a beer on a Friday night, Phil.
No, that makes total sense. Beer, gin and tonic, whatever it is, that makes total sense.
Yeah, I do. But South Australia is still my spiritual home, and Mum's still up on a farm up at Woodside in Adelaide Hills, and I love nothing better than if I'm travelling and I've got a spare half hour to drop into a winery and just say g'day or catch up with somebody. That's the community that we have, and as to my generation, I've got twin boys that are 16. They're starting to be curious about wine, but their lives are their lives, and sport for them kills my weekends, Jill. So I'm a bit
So actually getting up early this morning for this interview is actually just part and parcel. It's just normal.
Yeah, I love the mornings. I'm an annoying morning person, unfortunately, according to my family.
I reckon.
So you mentioned that your mum's Woodside.
Most out of the day if you get up early and get into
you
it.
Do.
Yeah.
You do, absolutely. You do.
Yeah.
Just a quick one on Woodside. Woodside's such a beautiful area. Do you have some favourite varietals from around Adelaide Hills? Because I really think that they produce some of the best wines in Australia.
Yeah, and you're right, they do. To me, Chardonnay, it's such a global grape. You can grow it anywhere. But it actually, once you start getting down to absolute quality, it really narrows down to where it best suits. And there's some pockets in the Adelaide Hills that are producing Chardonnay of global sort of quality. You know, you can put them on the table. Like the team at Shaw & Smith are doing at the moment. I had a single vineyard, Lenswood Vineyard Chardonnay recently that was stratospherically good. But yeah, I think as a category, Australian Chardonnay, what we're producing at the moment is, in terms of pound for pound or dollar for dollar, the value proposition is extraordinary.
Totally agree. And look, what you must do, this is an absolute 100% please must do, do get to the Hunter Valley at some point and go and visit Windmark Wines that was purchased by Karen Adcock back in 2020. She only produces Chardonnay. So she's the only vineyard in the Hunter Valley that is a mono varietal vineyard. And she produces four different styles and they are absolutely, they're gobsmackingly, stratospherically brilliant. I love that word now. I'm going to use it.
We're going to hear that word so much.
I mean,
that's great.
I'm looking forward to meeting it.
Yep, put on the to-do list.
Hey Ben, this has been a great chat, and it's very exciting for us to watch these eight brands, and and also, you know, anything else that may get added to the stable and or portfolio. So it must be pretty easy for the wine reps to get into a place.
I think quality is quality at the end of the day, isn't it? Mm. In Australia, we've got so many incredible brands that I think as a collective, you know, there's I don't look at anything as competition. I kind of celebrate the differences that we have. So it's not a sale at the expense of something else. It's, you know, what's the why question for this one? You know, why is it so good? Why does it work with this this particular type of cuisine at this restaurant or the style of a venue that's there? So what are they trying to deliver? And then, you know, having such diversity within our folio, I think across both price points, style and varietals, there is a solution there right through the whole mix.
Yeah.
Is there a bit of a... I'm just thinking all of your brands are so well known, but is there a bit more of a consistency of varietal that you do tend to, you know, be promoting and selling more over others?
Yeah, I think maybe because we've got quite a few brands in South Australia, Jill, we're very red wine centric.
Yes.
So I think, you know, Shiraz is obviously the big vehicle across the whole industry, and we celebrate that in its different forms. But I just love seeing, particularly from the Brosso, some Grenache that's coming through there off of some old vines. You know, there's some unique vineyards there that people are starting to work with again at a single vineyard level where you know, we're not over extracting, we're fermenting at good temperatures, we're not over oaking, and we're releasing at better times, you know, so there's a bit more freshness with them. So I think just seeing Grenache sort of remorph both in McLaren Vale and the Brosso, that's been pretty exciting to watch.
Yeah, and then you've got, you know, wineries like Chapel Hill and McLaren Vale, you know, they've got some what we're calling alternate or used to, you know, but, you know, Fianos and all that sort of stuff, like the white wine material that they're working with over there, you know, there's it's ready to go. You've got also Joseph Cromie out of Tassie, you know, you've got some white stuff there. You need to, start kind of heroing a bit of that, I reckon.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely, particularly in Tasmania with the sparkling program. So, Jill, I live by rule of thumb, more bubbles, less troubles. And, I love sparkling and champagne. So, definitely worth a look. Joseph Cromie, if ever you're near Launceston, the estate there with the Hatted restaurant, just to sit there nestled amongst the vines overlooking, the whole estate with a mature vineyard and a glass of bubbles in hand, that's pretty hard to beat too.
Mm. Absolutely. I like that. More bubbles, less troubles. And I actually did visit Joseph Cromie, but it was a long time ago. So it's well overdue for another visit.
Like
look, Ben, this has been wonderful to chat. And yeah, I love that we've been able to traverse so many different brands and subjects. You know, sometimes it's fun just to focus on one thing and go really deep, but to actually get this overview of everything. And I love how you bring everything back to the family style of it. I think that's gorgeous. But this has been really, really fun. So look, good luck with everything with Paragon and yourself in the future. We'll be watching what's happening with the brands. And yeah, congratulations again on Oakridge's massive successes. We'll be speaking about them a lot later on in the show if you feel like listening in. Otherwise, have a great rest of Sunday. Go get coffee number three.
Thanks, Jill.
Wine number one.
Wine number one. Bubbles. Bubbles. It's time.
Of course.
Thank you, Ben. Lovely to chat.